This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. A candidate endorsed by Donald Trump was defeated in a congressional runoff yesterday in western North Carolina. It was a surprise victory for political newcomer Madison Cawthorn. The 11th congressional district seat was left up for grabs back in December when Mark Meadows announced that he wouldn't seek re-election, and soon after Mark Meadows joined the president's cabinet as chief of staff. To tell us more about the runoff and prospects for the general election, I am joined by Corey Valancourt, a reporter for Smoky Mountain News and Blue Ridge Public Radio. Hello, Corey.
Hey, Frank. Glad to be back with you.
Good to have you here. Tell us more about Madison Cawthorn, and it is Cawthorn with a C. Tell us more.
So Madison is a Henderson County native and has been widely publicized. He's only 24 years old. Probably the defining event of his life, a few years back, he was involved in a car accident that left him able to mobilize only in a wheelchair. So he's had some setbacks, but apparently he spent his time productively because he went from being a relatively unknown political newcomer in the March 3rd primary. Honestly, he was a second-tier candidate to some pretty heavyweight competitors, and he shocked people by coming in second to Linda Bennett, who had already had some pretty powerful people behind her.
Tell us more about Linda Bennett. You're right. She was first one in, and there were a lot of questions about her candidacy right from the start.
Ironically, I think the way her campaign was launched was meant to be a gift, but it proved to be one of her biggest liabilities. So as you said at the top, Mark Meadows unexpectedly announced he wouldn't seek his seat. That came in very controversial fashion. It happened at 4 a.m, and before most people had even gotten out of bed, Linda Bennett had already filed. So there was some advanced knowledge there. She had a website that had been set up in October. So that generated a lot of resentment among Republicans who kind of thought they wanted to have a fair shake at this seat. And again, nobody expected Meadows to say that he wouldn't run again. He's powerful. He's popular. He probably could have held this district until he didn't want to anymore. But from there, it was pretty much all downhill for Bennett.
Yeah, but she did get, I mean, not all downhill. She gets a quick endorsement, too, from none other than Donald Trump.
That's right. The Trump endorsement is interesting as well, because a lot of us here on the political beat thought that would be a death blow to Madison Cawthorn. But I think the Trump endorsement, what people are saying now, this is playing into a national narrative that wants to make the president look weak. And I don't think that this is a test case for that specifically. This was a very special circumstance in which you had a very deeply flawed candidate. And you also have that kind of ethos of Southern Appalachia and the mountain region that encompasses much of this district, that these people aren't going to be told what to do by somebody from Washington. Despite the fact that Cawthorn is a Trump supporter, and I would wager to say every one of the people that voted for him last night are also Trump supporters.
And we should point out, also now has Trump support.
That's right. So it's going to be a long, hot summer, most likely. We're going to be looking at him trying to now shift his campaign from debating or trying to debate Republicans to debating Colonel Morris Davis, the Democrat. So this is Western Carolina University professor Chris Cooper told me a while ago this was the most interesting race in the country, and I believe that still holds true now.
Well, tell us more about Mo Davis. Very interesting. A retired colonel who, frankly, has served in the military longer than Cawthorn has been alive, right?
That's right. 25 years. So Mo Davis is a Shelby native, and he spent a lot of time away in service of our country. Probably the most notable part of that is he was a prosecutor at Guantanamo Bay, and he resigned over the use of torture or evidence obtained by the use of torture. And so it's clear that he's not afraid to speak truth to power. He was also, I believe, an administrative law judge, and he worked in Congress. And he was separated from that job in Congress because of an op-ed that he wrote. So he has managed to upset both the right and the left at certain points in his career.
Let's talk a little bit. I want to step back, too, to just take one last look at the runoff election. You said, well, we probably shouldn't make too much of the fact that Donald Trump's candidate lost in this one. There's a lot of special circumstances. But what about voting? Is there anything that we can tell about voting in the general election that you took away from this one? Obviously, voting's going to look very different. What did you notice in terms of turnout or absentee voting?
Well, turnout was interesting because you had 45,000 people cast their votes in this race, just two candidates. It was the only race on the ballot, the only reason to go to the polls in NC-11. And so 45,000 people, that's a good little number. A lot of people may not remember back in 2012 when Meadows first ran, he also faced a runoff against a guy named Vance Patterson. And although the turnout percentages aren't published for that race because it's so old, only 24,000 people voted in that one. So we had roughly double the turnout in this runoff last night, about 12%, that we had back in 2012. And that's with roughly the same number of voters. So it's fair to say that this race was especially contentious in the 16 and a half counties that make up NC-11.
And it may point to greater interest in the general election and greater turnout. So let's talk about where these two candidates now, Mo Davis, the Democrat, and Cawthorn, the Republican, where do they stand on some of the big issues, unemployment, Black Lives Matter?
Well, the Black Lives Matter thing is interesting because this didn't really pop up in the campaign until the very end. You know, the killing of George Floyd didn't occur until May 25th. And so much of the runoff campaigning hadn't really addressed that issue. Now, I will tell you, I know that Mo Davis attended a Black Lives Matter rally. I think it was in Mars Hill. And then I saw Madison Cawthorn in Franklin at a Black Lives Matter rally. He wasn't at the rally, but he was there thanking first responders and Sheriff Robert Holland and all of the law enforcement there for protecting Americans' right to protest. So I think they're going to have to flush out their positions on the entire Black Lives and racial justice movement that has suddenly become a huge, huge issue on top of the pandemic, on top of the protests. Now we are looking at a new reality, and these folks politically are going to have to sort that out.
Corey Valancourt reports for Smoky Mountain News and Blue Ridge Public Radio. Thanks, Corey.
Always a pleasure, Frank.
Well, North Carolina is one of only five states this year with presidential, gubernatorial, and Senate races. WNC political reporter Rusty Jacobs took a look at how that trifecta on the ballot is affecting finances and voter engagement. Hello, Rusty.
Hey, Frank.
We knew this was going to be an expensive election cycle in North Carolina, but then there's a global recession and, you know, everything else we're dealing with. Has that put a damper on spending?
COVID-19 does not impede people from buying ads and airtime. So, no, the Senate campaign in particular, Senator Tom Tillis running against Democratic challenger Cal Cunningham, is shaping up to be what people expected, one of the more expensive races. You got to remember, North Carolina is one of the core four, Maine, Colorado, Arizona, and North Carolina, all seen as truly being flippable this year from Republican to Democrat. So money is coming in, not just from the campaigns themselves, but from groups that support those campaigns. Between June and November, already almost $100 million committed to ads from both campaigns. And that's kind of split a little more for Democrats than Republicans. And there's only going to be more purchases between now and November.
Yeah, candidates that we assume are not going to be driving around, not as many hot town halls and greetings. So I guess the money is being spent otherwise on media campaigns.
Right. Paul Shoemaker is a longtime political consultant for Republicans. He's working with Senator Tom Tillis. He said in a 24-hour period because of the coronavirus outbreak, they went from a door-to-door campaign, quickly shifted to a phone-based campaign. But he also said they've actually seen advantages to doing, say, three Zoom calls in a day with potential donors and voters as opposed to doing, say, a stop in one town and meeting, you know, 50 or so people. So it has not come with a lot of it has not had a detrimental effect, at least as far as this one consultant's concerned.
Have any of the political analysts you talked to told you who might have an advantage to this kind of change in campaign tactic and strategy?
I think that the tactical change is probably affecting challengers and incumbents alike. They both have to shift resources and figure out another way to reach people. The effect is really going to be in what happens come once voting starts, right? What is turnout going to be like? What factors will things like the protests against police brutality and demonstrations for racial justice, what effect is those are those things going to have on getting people to the polls or getting people to fill out those applications for absentee mail ballots?
So that's a look at turnout, but then the issues themselves, and let's talk about the effect on the incumbent. Governor Cooper polling well when you ask North Carolinians how he's handling the COVID-19 outbreak. But if this goes on much longer and unemployment continues, do you see these weighing in favor of Governor Cooper, or does the incumbent suffer because of this?
Well, look, as you say, Governor Cooper has an advantage. I mean, he's got wider name recognition than Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, his Republican challenger. People know his name, and that's often a huge factor in why people choose the candidate they ultimately go for. There are big issues on the horizon that have yet to be resolved. Schools. There's a lot of voting parents across the state who want to know what's going to happen with schools, and that could have an effect. That could open up a lot of voter frustration. What about the soaring unemployment? Those are clearly issues that Dan Forrest might seek to tap into for an advantage. I'll say this, though. Even despite the fairly good approval rating for Governor Cooper and less name recognition for Dan Forrest, some political consultants and observers will tell you that this state it's obvious that there are a third registered voters Democrat, a third are registered as Republicans, and a third are unaffiliated. But of the unaffiliated, only a sliver of those, maybe 12%, actually swing from party to party in any given election. A lot of them are behavioral Democrats or behavioral Republicans. So in the end, it's going to come down to that sliver of voters who will decide on election day or when they cast that absentee ballot who to go for. And that's where those big issues might tip the scale in one direction or another.
Rusty Jacobs, political reporter for WNC. Thanks, Rusty.
You're welcome.